Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting broadcast, absolutely sure to blow your brain places out your ear places with the incredible facts, information, and terrible, terrible jokes that go with it that aren't quite as bad as the information implies. My very special guest joining me today, I don't know, if I was the mainstream media, I'd call her a serial guest of the Vinnie Eastwood show. Evelyn Gilbert from Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Vinnie.
Now, you've just released...
It's good to be back.
You've just released a little bit of a post this morning about John Key's response to the massive Trans-Pacific Partnership protests that happened all over New Zealand just last weekend.
And I titled it When Misinformed is Just Another Word for Muppet. Because that's really what he's saying. He's saying we're Muppets, Vinny.
Like the whole lot of us?
Well, all the rent-a-crowd demonstrators, because he also calls us rent-a-crowd demonstrators. And Tim Grosser calls us breathless children, and calling himself the adult who has to do the secret trade dealing. I thought I'd write about that.
So let me get this straight. It's not the 605 corporations and the massive banks and scumbaggery and all the politicians with the power with their hands in the cookie jar that we should worry about them renting certain people to push their point of view. It's the broke-ass activists who live in the countries that are about to be despoiled even further by this trade deal. Those are the people that have got all the money to hire all these protesters, right?
I'm still having to send in my bill, my invoice.
Yeah. What was?
Because I was there.
What was it? $5 a head. where's my cut? You know, I reckon.
Actually, some activists made an invoice, and I go on Facebook, and the Hamilton TPPA crowd made an invoice that we should all send to John Key for being rent-a-crowd demonstrators, and they sort of calculated, I think, $40 an hour. A little extra bonus if you spoke. So we might as well get paid for it.
Yeah, I reckon I deserve at least maybe $60, $70 an hour, you know, leading the protest. It's a lot of work, especially doing all the filming and editing that stuff up later.
Absolutely. You should get awarded a big bonus.
Yeah, I should. But instead, I get shafted by the government. Again. And that's...
Yes, we all do.
Well, that's the truth of activism, is it not? That if you go up against the wealthy and the powerful, there's not a whole lot of wealth or power in it.
I think most people who actually go through a phase and actually make it into politics, like, you know, Andrew Little and the Labour boys who've been in the unions, they end up with good wages too.
Of course,
Andrew. You don't see them on the street so much anymore.
Yeah, of course, Andrew got tossed out of the New Zealand First Party. Well, not tossed out, but he got given a very, very low position all of a sudden in the New Zealand First Party. And then he quit because it was just an insult. And they also let go another politician who said something along the lines that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand is a privately run entity.
You mean Russell Norman?
No, it was a Pacific Islander lady.
Okay, because Russell Norman also started to talk about that we should be starting to print our own money again rather than have international banks decide on how much money we have. And he disappeared pretty swiftly after that, by the way.
Russell's gone?
Yeah.
Sweet mercy, I haven't even been watching the TV. When did this happen?
Well, he's not gone, but he's no longer the leader of the Greens. He stepped back as the leader, and he's now a backbencher.
As of last election?
He was voted in as the leader. And then around about December, he started to talk about the Federal Reserve and about how money should be printed by us. Although he still said that our Reserve Bank is ours, which it isn't. But he basically said that we should break away from banks. And within a month, he announced his leadership to be up for grabs by other people, and he stepped back.
Must have been a coincidence. Guy talks out about bankers in Parliament. Guy suddenly gets demoted in Parliament. Yeah, there's no connection here.
No, we don't do conspiracies. This is all accidental.
Like, people ask these questions, is this real or is it just a conspiracy? As if, you know, there's no such thing as conspiracy, as if because it's a conspiracy, therefore it's not real. As far as I know, there's laws against conspiracy. There aren't any laws against leprechauns, however. That's because they're not real.
Exactly. But that's funny, isn't it? I mean, how people sort of make out like, oh, well, it's a conspiracy, therefore it must be not true. Conspiring is what men do, what people do in little back rooms. It's what they've always done. And that's why there are laws against it.
Well, you know, the theory goes that apparently at some point in the 21st century, warmongering, power-hungry psychopaths suddenly just lost the desire for world domination. They're like, nah, bro, I've got enough money and power. What would I want world domination for?
Yep, that all of a sudden disappeared and they're all sweeties now.
Anyway,
how about we talk about why I think that the word misinformed is used here as the word Muppet?
Sure, but just before you do, I like to notice the irony of somebody who's intentionally misinforming the public, telling the public that they're misinformed. But go right ahead.
And which is why, of course, we demonstrate, because we would like to be informed. We would like to read the text of the TPPA. We would like to know what is in it. We would like to know what they're deciding over our heads. And we would like to know if we want to be part of it. So we're not saying we don't want to be part of it, period. We want to know what's in the trade agreement. And if it's so good, if it's so wonderful for all of us, we would like to know. What I was trying to write is that, in order for people to understand why that word misinformed came out so wrong when he used it and everybody felt insulted, was because in order for you to understand it, that is, you have to know how John Key was a banker and what his career was like and in what kind of an environment he was working for 20 years. And the first bank that he started to work in, which was in 1987 instead of 1988, which he says he did, the Bankers Trust Bank had a policy of ripping off customers. That was their stated plan. And they had even a term for that ripping off. It was called the rip-off factor or the ROF factor. And we know this because when Procter & Gamble, a big international corporation and not a very nice one at that, tried to sue the Bankers Trust Bank, the Bankers Trust Bank was forced to give Procter & Gamble tons of telephone conversations, which were all about this kind of, this system is great with the derivatives because people don't know how much they get ripped off. And, a little bit later, it came out that the bank, Goldman Sachs, called their customers Muppets. They're all Muppets. They're waiting to be fleeced. So that is really the kind of attitude John Key has brought with him towards the New Zealand population, Vinny.
What the problem is with John Key? It doesn't matter what he says, he destroys whatever it is. You know? He could say the sky is blue, and I'd instantly start being suspicious about that. If he says we're misinformed, it means we're correctly informed. If he says there's nothing to worry about my past, that means there's everything to worry about in his past.
Absolutely.
The fact that people still trust him.
And his presence, because...
Go ahead.
Because he's still, you know, they freed up 6,500 telephone calls and without exception, they were all talking about how they were going to rip off people, customers, the bigger the better, you know, pension funds. Whoa, great stuff. You know, people who don't want to look too close. It's all a bit too complicated, but they trust the bank to sell them the goods. And they're being sold the goods, except, of course, it's in the advantage of the bank, not the pension funds. And John Key was very much involved in selling crap to pension funds, if I'm allowed to say that word.
He wouldn't have explained it in such a straightforward way, though. They would have used a lot more words to describe what they're doing so as to confuse you with a whole bunch of things that you've never heard of before and don't quite comprehend the existence of, even after it's been explained to you. And I'm reminded of what Lewis Black said after all these collapses in the United States and all these people stealing billions of dollars through schemes like this. He said, if you want to prevent this from happening, here's the law. If you have a business and you can't explain in one sentence what it does, it's illegal. Precisely the same thing would be applied to banking. Explain to me what your business does. Well, we sell derivatives onto a offshore market and such and such. And no, it's illegal. Get out of here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if it's made legal, it is definitely immoral. Because, you know, if you have control over the laws of a land and you can change them, and even backwards, like John Key's been known to do, it's still morally wrong.
Can we denote any one instance where John Key has told something very truthful, totally honest, and without, you know, playing down or anything like that? Like, when you think of real honest people, you see how they talk and the kind of casual things that they say. Does he do this? I don't think so.
I have only hear him talk the truth when he thought people wouldn't understand what he was going to say. For example, when he was interviewed on Breakfast TV a couple of years ago about the banking crisis, and he said at some stage, well, they could have known they were never going to get their money back. He is actually referring to himself when he was selling derivatives, and he sort of knew that it was all crap and that they would definitely never get their money back. So that's when he sort of let slip the truth. Other than that, he's a compulsive liar. He's incapable of speaking the truth.
Yeah, and you see it time after time after time. Somebody foolishly attempted to say the top 100 lies John Key's told. It's like, dude, you have to sift through like 7,000 of them per week. 1,000 lies a day.
The moment he opens his mouth, he's not speaking the truth. If he tells us why we need a new flag, he's not speaking the truth.
He's
misinforming us.
And if he's even talking about a new flag instead of talking about something else that he's like wanting to kind of like keep public attention away from, and maybe using the flag as a distraction, you know, it doesn't matter how or what or why he's communicating to you. It's a lie. And the fact of the matter is, our entire system, especially in the Five Eyes nations, is infected with these kind of compulsively untruthful sociopaths that are running the country so that people don't click on to the fact that it's actually run by somebody other than these lying sociopaths that you can see on television that have names that you recognize.
Absolutely. And we know that John Key is meeting with these people when he's abroad. If he goes to Europe, he meets with the Bank of England. You know, we get to see the nice pictures of him with the Queen, but really, he's meeting captains of industry. He's meeting with the Bank of England governor. He's meeting with NATO leaders. He does a lot of signing of contracts abroad that we don't know much about. like the new contract with the new partnership with NATO. And he says, well, we're partners. We're not members of NATO. We're partners with NATO. Well, you know, if you go and look at what that actually means, it's exactly the same. We're full partners with NATO. He signed a contract. There was no discussion about it. And as a result, we've had the biggest Southern Hemisphere NATO exercises in this country that you also hardly hear about. And he meets with bigwigs. You know, he meets with the Goldman Sachs boys. He meets with the Bank of America. He's got most of his money, his wealth, still as shares in the Bank of America, which means that he's got a huge conflict of interest. And we know nothing about that officially.
And that's only his disclosed conflicts of interest, which is in the register of interests for New Zealand politicians. That's the only one I can really see in there, other than his family trust, which nobody's allowed to know the details, including him, allegedly, which he's got two trusts, one that just reflects the other
he's
one.
He's got two. Yes, exactly. He couldn't really hide these shares in the Bank of Interest because he had to declare them when they were still shares of Merrill Lynch. And the amount of shares or, you know, in bonuses is quite likely more than half of his total wealth. And basically what that tells me is that it's like the mafia. The banking world is like the mafia. Once you're in, you can never get out.
I wouldn't use a simile. I wouldn't say they're like the mafia. They are.
They are. Most definitely. They are financing mafia. They are the mafia. They're working in exactly the same way. They're blackmailing people. They are threatening whole nations. You know, if you don't bail us out, we'll just bankrupt the country. So they're working just like organized crime.
And they're probably the most organized criminals on the planet, which is probably why they control more resources and more human lives than any of the other bands of criminal thugs that are trying to wrestle for control at this point, because banking is more or less the center of all things good and great in a world where corruption is king. Because if you can just make money up in order to bribe people with it, there's no limits to how many people you can bribe and pay off and how many crimes you can get away with.
Exactly, because that's what they're doing. They're printing money out of thin air. They're not even printing the money. They're just creating zeros and ones in computers and paying people with it, and people believe that that is actually a valid currency.
It requires zero investment. Zero investment, 100% profit.
Yeah.
Is that not the ideal? Is that not the ideal? In fact, if you look at the definition of fraud, it's when you give something to someone and they believe it's of value, but it doesn't actually have any value. That's fraud. If I sell you a cubic zirconia and I tell you it's a 24-carat diamond or something like that, and you buy it for the price of a 24-carat diamond, I could be done for fraud. So when these bankers do it, it's called issuing currency.
But more correctly, it should be called counterfeiting.
Yeah.
Because it dilutes 97% of all currency is now created by privately owned banks, without any supervision, without any controls. And they've diluted the currency supply to the world to the point where there is now 22 times the value of the entire planet, if you can put a value on the planet. But okay, the global GDP is so much, and the amount of money in circulation is 20 times that amount.
Now, speaking of which,
something like 1.5 quadrillion or something.
Yeah. And this is not including just, you know, New Zealand's small chunk of this. The declared national debt is like over 100 billion now. And of course, there's undeclared derivative debts that we're in, which are much larger than that. And
the last time I had that information, it was about 112 billion. And that was exactly.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for an update on that. Where the F are those records being kept? I cannot, for the life of me, think why people wouldn't want to know.
No, and you have You have to know where to find it. And I would probably think that we now have derivatives to the value of our entire annual GDP, which is about 167 billion.
I think more. What was the GDP of the US, and they had $2 quadrillion, but again not reported since 2011. So they must be growing quite exponentially to get up to those points in the first place. So I'm thinking it might be even several times our GDP, maybe double at this point. And that's trying to be conservative. These things are just completely out of control.
We know that the debt was, what, 17 trillion US? And for some reason, the debt clock has stopped. They're not showing how much the debt is growing anymore. It's been constant since February this year or something, which, of course, is crazy stuff because the amount of interest that the United States has to pay is growing by the day, and they will never pay it off. But on top of that, of course, you've got the derivatives layer. And how much is 1.5 quadrillion? That is 1,500 trillion. 1,500 trillion. That's 10 times as much, almost.
It's just basically, these numbers are so staggering that people can't even conceive this, okay? I don't know. What's the most expensive car in today? It'd be like a Bugatti or something like that you see on Transformers 4, and that's only a $2 million car. All right? And you're talking about being able to purchase trillions of those kind of thing.
Yes.
That's how nuts it is. How much of the global economy, like let's say they say measures of the economy, like let's say you valued all the assets on earth, every single thing down to the last toothbrush, and you combined all of those values together, and then you compare it with the derivatives bubble. Methinks the derivatives bubble is quantitatively larger than the value of every single thing on earth combined.
That's about 20 times more than whatever the planet is deemed to be worth at the moment. 22 times.
What do they need with all this money? Are they going to try and buy planets in distant solar systems based upon derivative debts that they're getting subsequent generations of slave earthlings to pay off? What the... Are they going to start their own space program?
It's beyond me, but I think, you know, if you just think about that kind of money, and oh, you know what? All it takes is for a country like Greece, which is 0.4% of GDP, to go bankrupt and for all of this to collapse into nothing.
Well, of course, okay? It hasn't all collapsed into nothing just yet.
No, but they kept Greece going. And they've basically just done a leveraged buyout of Greece, and they're selling off the airfields, the beaches, the temples, God knows what. It's in a fire sale at the moment. But the thing is, they can't allow for Greece to go bankrupt because that's the moment when big investment funds start calling in the derivatives that they bought as leverage against a defaulting nation. And the moment that happens, What will happen is that's when it shows that there is no money to pay. Because unlike an insurance company that has to have the reserves to pay out claims, with derivatives they didn't have to. But they made out like there was no risk, there would never be any risk, and all you had to do was leverage. But now they're stuffed because if Greece goes, Italy will go, Spain will go, and overnight 22 times the GDP will disappear into the blue yonder, leaving a lot of hopeless, very poor bankers. But it would free the global population to start building again.
Sometimes if you've got a gangrenous limb and it threatens the entire body with its rot, sometimes it pays to just be one-legged.
you don't need banks. If there is such a thing that we need a system that, you know, you can borrow some funds if you want to start a small business, because at the moment, banks only spend money on housing bubbles, financial products, and trying to get the population in as much debt as possible, but they're not investing in small businesses, they're not investing, or other than the financial institutions, they're not investing in infrastructure, and they're basically bubbling Auckland, bubbling New York, bubbling London, bubbling wherever they spend their money, and whether it's the Chinese who do. The Chinese are printing about $1 trillion.
It's funny, Evelyn, per year, because as well. that list of things that you went through, the small businesses, the infrastructure, and all the things that are kind of important to an economy is what those banks don't invest in. And you know who that reminded me of? Alan Hubbard, because that was almost that was a large part of what South Canterbury Finance, which is the country's largest finance company, had. And he got set up by the government. The Simon Power put him under official investigation. His investors panicked. And then after it was all over, Westpac Bank made a killing off of the fire sale. And then they gave Simon Power a job as their head of corporate banking. And then guess what? They managed to somehow, through this massive Ponzi scheme, return 96% of investors' money.
Absolutely. And there was absolutely no reason for this. And Hubbard was one of the few people who actually invested in small businesses.
He gave farmers loans when nobody else would give it to him. There were farmers, you know, hanging themselves or about to because they couldn't get money for their farms and things like that. And isn't it funny how what the mafia does is they move into a territory and then they stake their claim on that territory and then they systematically wipe out the competition.
Yep. And then they hollow out the businesses. They're doing all kinds of little backroom deals. They're sucking, like, in a, you know, all of a sudden they own part of a restaurant. And or they're shareholders in the restaurant, and before you know it, the stock will go down. They will sell bad booze. They will destroy the name of a restaurant, and slowly suck it dry. And the former owner who built it up will be left destitute. And that is what's happening in New Zealand. I mean, to date, that I'm aware of, 40 farmers have committed suicide this year already.
In New Zealand?
In New Zealand. And that's 40 farming families that have been destroyed. And what is happening in Australia, and it's happening here too now, is that banks are calling in their debts. Not because people are in arrears or defaulting on their mortgages, because they're still paying their mortgages. But what they're doing is, in Australia, is they're saying, well, you're underwater, your farm isn't worth it, that makes it a liability, so we're going to foreclose on you. People who've lived in these farms 75 years have always diligently paid their mortgages, and they're taking these farms away from these people and selling them to the Chinese. And whether you like Chinese or not, this is not the Chinese people, this is the Chinese elite. Just like it is the American elite, the Canadian elite, they're all trying to get their hands on
the
real world.
It's just the elite. They have no allegiance to any flag, any race, any religion, no nothing. Okay? They have loyalty to one thing, themselves.
Themselves, absolutely. So this is what's happening, and it will happen here in New Zealand. We're already seeing it here in where I live, is sort of an overflow area of Auckland. And all of a sudden, lifestyle blocks that haven't been sold for the last 20 years are being sold and have great, huge McMansions built on them for people who are either leveraging against the overvalue in their house, which is going to be funny when it all collapses, or who sold their house and want to retire in the countryside and decide to build a huge palazzo somewhere. And house prices in Hamilton are going up like mad. Canterbury... not Canterbury, but Cambridge. You know, house prices are rising like absolute crazy.
They're trying to cluster everybody into these large kind of mega city blocks connected by big highways and more or less just force everybody off the land systematically. Sounds like the process of the mafia to me, isn't it? It's like a broad scale.
They're calling
version.
It Agenda 21.
Agenda 21,
yeah. They're calling it
We need to actually get this out. I'm really, really sick, Ev, of going to protests and public meetings and things of that nature and never hearing anybody say the words Agenda 21. This is just like the cream of the crop. It really is tied in to our entire way of life now. It's probably the most important thing to be raising people's awareness of simply the congruence of different forms of wavelengthical scumbaggery that have somehow nexused over our entire country's apparatus, the way the government's run, the way private corporations are taking over a lot of the government services, the whole kit and caboodle. Every single part of your life today is in some way influenced by Agenda 21 as we speak.
Hamilton is an official Agenda 21 town. And every political decision you can see is within the Agenda 21 scheme of things. When I don't live very far away from Hamilton, and when we wanted to have some money to build a shed, the first question was, how far do you live from a big town? As if, you know, if you're outside of a certain radius, they're not giving you loans anymore. Mortgage loans for houses. So you see the way things have, you know, are being built in Hamilton is that what once was like two allotments with one house on it, all of a sudden, you know, 16 houses in little rows are being built on it. So they're condensing the city, trying to get more and more people in these condensed little streets. The argument is, well, we need, you know, people need to get in the housing market, or people are only just starting out on their own and they can't afford a big house. But what they don't want to do is build more houses on more allotments. They just take, okay, three allotments that used to have three houses, and all of a sudden they're building 16 houses on it. All, you know, with only one wall separating them, much like European cities. And you will see that that's now it's only one floor, and you already see the second floors, and it will become high rise, so that people will be shut away in high rises in towns. No transport. They want to discourage people owning cars. They want to limit the way people can travel. They're shutting people away from the countryside. And I wouldn't be surprised if, for example, the whole killing of the dairy is part of that.
Well, they need to kill off everything. I mean, basically, off limits to human activity will be the classification for the majority of the land in New Zealand in the future. Off limits to human activity, highly restricted access. The only way to keep people out of the majority of the land is to get them off the majority of the land. And you can't do it quickly. You can't just, you know, roll in with bulldozers. This isn't Palestine. You can't get away with that kind of stuff here.
Not yet. But at some stage, I mean, already what you see in small towns like Kafia villages, you know, they won't give people, there's no WINS office anymore. And if you want to live there, what they're saying is, well, if you want to live there, you clearly don't want a job because there's no jobs there to be had. And we won't give you WINS. We won't support you. You won't be on the dole. If you want to be on the dole, come to Hamilton, try and find a job. Get a small apartment, but at least you're showing you want to work. So that's how they're getting people out of villages. Everywhere.
in the early years of my radio career, if my sickness benefit ran out because I was no longer depressed because I was actually fighting against the New World Order and that was what was depressing me. So they stopped giving me my benefit and they told me, hey, you now have to come in to us every day at this particular time and look for a job that you don't want. And I go, okay, well, what time is it? Man, that's the exact same time as my radio show. Are you telling me that I have to give up the only work I have in order to come into to your office, which I don't want to do, to look for a job that I don't want in order to get the money that I need to survive? Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll just find a way to survive without you then. Goodbye. and I've been
with that. Of course, that's what, you know, what they've found is that people, that the WINS officers have way more violence and threats and people losing it because, well, they've got nothing left to lose. Which is a Gerald Celente saying, which is very true. You know, if people have nothing left to lose, they lose it. And since Ashburton last year, where three people were killed, the since that time, assaults on the staff have doubled. But if you hear the stories about how people are treated, you know, the other day I was told this story from a woman who had $150 in the bank account and her husband needed that to go to his job. So they couldn't spend it on food. So she went to WINS for a food package and they didn't give it to her because they said, you've got $150 in the bank. And this is how it's going to go.
And so this is why I noticed this. Outside WINS offices, there are now private security, usually two. And it seems to me that there's a reason for that. Kind of the same reason why the President of the United States is surrounded by security. Kind of the same reason why John Key's surrounded by security. The things that people are most likely to hate and want to stop are often the ones who spend the most on means to protect themselves from justice.
Yeah. And of course, you know, with the all of a sudden announcement that every police person in New Zealand was going to be carrying a taser at all times, just before the big NTTP, because, you know, the demonstrations are getting bigger. The anti-TPPA demonstrations. So it's very opportune that all of a sudden the entire police force, from, you know, the people who have to act on the street police, all have tasers. Next will be guns.
They're just going to keep arming themselves and arming themselves until eventually we're going to have a militarized police. Who treat the public as something to destroy rather than protect.
They don't have that rule here. They're not here. They protect the law or protect, well, the ruling elite, but they're most definitely not here to protect us.
Well, not in practice. Maybe. No, even in theory, it was quite funny. I managed to talk to some cops after the Occupy Auckland protest was just taken out by private security that were hired by the council because the cops weren't allowed to do it because of freedom of speech, etc. So the local government just hired private security to do it and the cops to protect them. I love it how they can play these little mind games. But I asked one of the cops, does that sound like a free country to you? And he smirked at me and he says, what makes you think you live in a free country?
This was a guy that, a policeman that said that to you?
Yeah. Looked like a senior policeman as well.
Yeah, well, he's probably speaking the truth.
Well, you know, this is how you tell if it's the truth, or at least it's one of the many indicators. Is it really disturbing and kind of pisses you off? It's probably true.
Yeah. I mean, if you see how quickly they got rid of every single journalist or TV show host who was critical of the government, of John Key and the TPPA, it's astonishing.
I just read an article this morning about this. Mike Hosking, one of these people of which you're talking about, is very, very pro-government, very, very pro-John Key. Apparently he's been on one media show or another something like 70 times in the last month, right? Like a saturation of this kind of propaganda. And there was a great little poll that was being taken on a Radio Live or some website about this, asking whether you think he's a very biased journalist, and it's really obvious, whether you don't really know, maybe he's a bit biased on some things, or whether you think he's a quality journalist and he's really, really good at his job. And it was like 76% says he's extremely biased and it's very obvious. And about 16% no, he's a very, very credible journalist. I trust him implicitly.
Yeah, well, they would probably also trust John Key, no matter what he does. Mm. There are people who just need to trust that the authorities are okay.
Well, I became suspicious at first, and I tried to... You know how sometimes when you look for justifications for your theories in order to see whether there is one? So I was, like, Googling, what percentage of the population are mentally retarded? And it comes up with... about 3%. So I was like, no, 3%, 16%. There's not a correlation there. Okay, we'll toss that one out. We'll see. So obviously, if you think that Mike Hosking is a credible journalist, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're mentally retarded. But there's some other explanation now. I've been thinking about mind control quite a lot lately and media manipulation, so it seems pretty obvious to me.
But also, you know, you probably couldn't ask that of the Germans, but at the end of the World War, there are probably still 16% of all Germans who love... there's still 16%, I think, who still love Hitler. You know, there is a group of people...
Today, 60% of the population go, well, Adolf was awesome, bro.
What, here in Germany?
In Germany.
I don't know. I think that a lot of Germans really woke up to, you know, Germany is a strange country. They woke up to the Federal Reserve System. And... they probably also woke up to the fact that Hitler was basically bought and financed by the same forces that are now running the Federal Reserve. Because he was. He was financed by big American corporate entities. He was financed by the International Bank of Settlements, or you know, the Bush family were great financiers of Hitler. John Kerry's Heinz family, same thing. You know, they tried to get a Nazi-like regime in the United States in the 30s.
Yeah, they paid off what was it, General Smedley Butler, is one of the most decorated soldiers in U.S. history, to lead a fascist revolution against the U.S. government to overthrow it and throw it in with Hitler. And, of course, the ringleaders of this and the financiers, which Smedley Butler exposed because he wasn't willing to betray his countrymen, didn't go to jail and are still running the U.S. today, or at least their heritage is.
Yes. And what was, of course, it was an internal elite event, and elite protects the elite, so they didn't just publicly hang these people from the highest trees, as should have been done. And as a result, they still run the world today.
Because we didn't remain vigilant, and we are very capable of being placated by people who say a whole lot of things and don't actually say anything at all. And that's something that happens every time I see John Key answer a tough question. Well, I'm just going to avoid this question and criticize the opposition. Yeah, because that'll distract everybody. And the media just give
Laps
him that. No, they don't lap it up. They don't challenge it. They don't just go, here's the thing that really Fs me off. He gives an answer that's a non-answer, and they upload to their website his non-answer without critical analysis of what he actually said and how much of it is BS at all, without any analysis whatsoever. This is John Key's word. Just take it for it, you know?
Well, everybody knows what happens if you don't. You lose your job.
For goodness sake. Is speaking out against John Key a threat to people's livelihood nowadays?
Ask John Campbell, Dita Deboni, what's her name from Maori TV? The people who work on 60 Minutes are now basically being told to shut up or F off. You know, it's been Nikki Hager. All these people were intelligent, had criticism, were able to voice that criticism. They're all gone. And the people that stayed, the Duncan Garners, the, what's the chipmunk's name?
You could have described any journalist in New Zealand with the reference chipmunk, but...
No, Gower. What's his name?
Patrick Gower?
Yeah, him. You know, Hoskins, Plunkett, they're all, first of all, they love John Key, they love the, you know, the job they have. And they're not going to go bite the hand that feeds them.
Even if it's feeding them poison.
Well, yeah, but it buys them a nice house and a nice life. And so, you know.
And it all it costs is your soul.
Maybe they didn't have one in the first place. I don't know. I couldn't do it.
You could just take a stab in the dark, you know.
But, yeah, and they think, you know, this, what was his name again? Gower?
Patrick Gower, yeah.
Patrick Gower. He said that he was in favor of trade, therefore he thought it was perfectly fine to bribe, cajole, and otherwise buy off millionaires with millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Because that's part of doing business.
Well, that's probably because he bribed, stole, and schmoozed his way into the position. In fact, I'm making an unsubstantiated allegation, and it's made in the form of a joke, which is not intended to be made seriously. All I'm saying is that Patrick has no soul. Okay. Well, let's think about this in a context, because I've been worried about this for a long time, Ev. The problem with activists that I've found over my many years is that we're all very damaged people, and we're often very suspicious, and we're also very honourable. And what makes us difficult is collaborating with each other on all bases, because we've all come from different walks of life, had different things happen to us in order to create these personalities that we have that are self-reinforcing and usually try to reject a lot of different and what's seen as dangerous ideas. As a result, we are fractured, not in the way that maybe a window would be fractured, so that it's not a perfect hole anymore and you can see the cracks, but fractured more in the way like a Rubik's Cube would be if you simply got all the cubes out and laid them separately so that you can solve a grand puzzle and put the cubes in any way that you want. We're kind of working perfectly against whatever scumbaggery is our particularly forte in our own way. And we're working in concert whether we know it or not. I find that so many fights and divisions break out when we get together on Facebook or other things. Whereas in person, we totally get along with everything because we're all laughing and smiling because we're around somebody who's not a foolish person who believes everything the media and John Key tells them for once.
You know, I found that we started last year with about 50 people coming to an anti-TPPA demonstration. And last week I was in Hamilton and there were 2,000 something people, And we were demonstrating along Tarapa Strait, which is a massive highway. And there were so many cars honking their horns in solidarity. I mean, literally hundreds and hundreds of cars honking their horns. And I thought, wow, you know, going from 50 people and getting scowls from people who think you're nuts to all these people who are slowly becoming aware, because I think what is happening is that you're absolutely right. People like us, we're damaged. We're damaged through, because generally a little bit smarter than what people made us out to be. We woke up to the scumbaggery, as you call it. But more and more people are beginning to feel the pressure of this crazy group of people who is trying to push harder and harder, more and more desperate people. And they're all waking up. And of course, we have the internet, which allows people to make really quick connections. And whether you like Facebook or not, I mean, I use it to great advantage. And I meet a lot of people that I met on Facebook first in the real world. And I see that more and more people maybe get the same kind of damage and start waking up to the fact that the world isn't fun, isn't easy, and that we need to start working together if we want to just get these people out of our lives.
There's two types of people in this world, as Mark Passio says, those who want to be left alone and those who will not leave you alone. And seems to me like whatever entities are controlling these people, I'm not 100% sure if these people are entirely human, if to call them a psychopath, like it's some kind of mental disorder, is entirely accurate and it's just that easily clear cut. But I think this kind of breed of scumbaggery has existed for a very long time, ever since there was civilized man. Some would argue we haven't quite achieved that yet either, but but yeah, imagine this. Let's say there's 10,000 years of recorded history, give or take, and at every point throughout that history, everything that was once great and accomplished by man was actually operating underneath some psychopathic scumbag who killed and stole in order to make all these big things for himself. And now you look at John Key, and you think what he's accomplished, and what he's stealing, and what he's destroying, and what he's trying to leave as a monument to himself. And I see the same disease. I see the same infection, even the same inflection in their behaviors, and their accomplishments, and in their effects on real human beings that have a conscience and creativity, that have love in their hearts. I see them being destroyed. I see them being systematically undermined by creatures that have somehow figured out that we won't believe that there are people that don't think like us, that don't possess our morality or our conscience, and thus they get away with it. Evelyn Gilbert has been my very special guest. Check out her website, Aotearoa, A Wider Perspective. And also, I wanted to get you to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. Start up a $5 a month donation if you can. It would be very much appreciated right now as we grow and are now taking on people to help us do the work here. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in the next hour with Dr. Rima Labo talking about doctors, naturopaths and stuff that have gone missing recently. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because you're being exterminated doesn't mean you can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest joining me today, the mistress of the macabre, the labeler of scumbaggery, it's Dr. Rima Labo.
Well, thank you, Vinnie. I am so pleased to be recognized for what I am, the mistress of the macabre. It's been a long time since anybody noticed. Thank you.
Well, we all have our talents in pole dancing to consider. Now, speaking of things that are missing, we have been inundated here at the Vinnie Eastwood Show with articles from a number of different sources relating to the disappearance of naturopathic practicing doctors and things of this nature. Actually, quite a few of them, people making discoveries of some nature that are mysteriously dying.
Well, yes, and this is truly macabre and not at all funny, actually. This is something that we all need to be aware of, and we all need to understand clearly what's happening. Now, let me start out by saying that it's not just naturopathic doctors who are being exterminated, who are being executed. And one of them, Dr. Jeff Bradstreet, was very quickly ruled to have committed suicide, and here's how he did it. He shot himself in the chest twice with a rifle, and then after he was dead, so determined was he to commit suicide that he dragged himself to the river nearby and threw himself in post-mortem.
Sounds very, very similar to the case in Texas where a couple of cops got off a charge because obviously the suspect had cut themselves into pieces with a chainsaw, put themselves into a bag with a drawstring, and then tossed themselves into a ditch.
You know, I do appreciate determination.
Yeah, it's the thing that defines the human spirit.
It does. It does. And there are times when people just want to die. My very favorite in that macabre category was the guy. He was actually a federal whistleblower. And he put himself into his car. He covered himself from the neck down with a blanket, which he draped over the steering wheel. A normal suicide prodromal action. And then he shot himself 6 times in the heart. His hands were handcuffed behind his back. This man wanted to die.
You can see, ladies and gentlemen, how horrific reality is. You want to know why I make jokes that are almost as bad as reality? It's the only way to see the light side of it, because quite frankly there isn't one unless you invent it. This is some dark stuff.
There's very dark stuff. Let's talk about the holistic physicians, because that's what best describes them. And I too am a holistic physician, by the way. This is not only a theoretical concern for me. As of this date, there are 14 holistic physicians, and one of them being a dentist, who have either disappeared mysteriously or who have died in horrific, although rather different ways. One young woman in Florida who was waiting for her son and husband to return home was killed with a hammer by a home intruder. Dr. Jeff Bradstreet, a pioneering physician treating autism and other serious concerns and treating them successfully, which is why they were killed. We'll get to that in just a moment. Jeff Bradstreet was an MD. There have been DOs. 3 MDs in Mexico were told that they needed to drive to Mexico. Well, they needed to come to Mexico City to sign administrative documents. They were driving there with 2 administrative employees from their practice, and they were executed gangland style with semi-automatic weapons raking their car. Then their bodies were presented to their families for identification after the families were told that they were found in a truck. But the families pointed out, one, that they did not have any bullet holes, so these probably were not the right people. And that was made a certainty by the fact that they didn't look like their departed, and they also didn't have DNA matches. And the government of Mexico said, why don't we just forget this whole thing and just call it, you know, an accidental death? And the families have said no, and they are seeking justice. These doctors have been executed or have been abducted in a very short time. We're talking about 6 weeks. Now, what ties them together other than the fact that each of them was practicing outside the pharmaceutical paradigm? It's a substance called GCMAF. Each of these doctors had discovered that if they gave their patients with autism, with cancer, with macular degeneration, with a whole wide-ranging variety of conditions, life-threatening and life-destroying conditions, if they gave their patients GCMAF, that their patients would get well in A, pretty much no time, and B, pretty much everybody. Not 100% of everybody, but virtually unheard of numbers of people. For example, Dr. Jeff Bradstreet discovered that if he gave his patients GCMAF and used another technology to get it to penetrate the blood-brain barrier, that he was getting reversals in 85% of his autistic patients. 85% of his autistic patients were getting well. Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez of New York was finding that huge numbers of his cancer patients were getting well quickly, easily, and effortlessly. So they were curing autism, they were curing cancer, they were doing the big no-no. Well, what is GCMAF? I'm so glad you asked. Everybody knows that the sun is bad for you and that you have to walk around slathered in sunscreen and not let the sun touch your delicate skin, otherwise you'll get malignant melanoma. Now, that's very interesting, and like all propaganda, all good propaganda, it has a little bit of truth in it, so you can't say, well, the whole thing is nonsense. And indeed, overexposure to the sun can predispose you for skin cancer, usually not malignant melanoma, usually the much, much, much less deadly basal cell carcinoma, but still, it's skin cancer. However, 50% of the malignant melanomas that occur in areas which never, ever see the sun. They occur in areas which are always clothed when people are outdoors. And so the notion that the sun causes malignant melanoma just doesn't hold either water or sunshine. So now we have a propaganda effort that's been going on for quite a long time, telling people to fear the sun and protect themselves from it. Just put that point on the bulletin board for a moment. The next point to consider is that what the sun does for you is it helps your body develop vitamin D3. Now, vitamin D3 is a hormone-like molecule that has functions all over the body. Hormones affect every cell in the body, which is why they're so very powerful. And this hormone-like molecule, vitamin D3, is a very, very important immune trigger. Think of the immune system as an automobile that has all the power it needs and has great speakers and is tuned and ready to leap forward at any speed that it needs to be gunned to, except for the fact that it needs a starter to get things going. It needs a key in the ignition, and it needs somebody to turn that key. And then, vroom, it can go as fast and as far as you need it to do. Well, what is the key for the immune system? Just so happens it's vitamin D3. Vitamin D3 is changed by the body, by an enzyme, into something called GCMAF. Remember those five letters. They will save your life if we can get past the pharmaceutical and governmental interference with your health and your life that the death of these doctors represents very clearly. GCMAF is made from vitamin D3, and it is the key in the ignition of the immune system supercar. Once GCMAF has been released in the body, it signals the entire immune system, all right, let's get going, which, by the way, is why there's so much less flu and other chronic infectious disease or acute infectious disease occurring in the summer. It's because in the summer, people get outside and they get vitamin D, which then becomes GCMAF, and they have more immune function. So here's this molecule, GCMAF, made by the human body from vitamin D, which the sun gives us, which we can take as supplements to. And it turns on the immune system, and it gets rid of cancers, and it gets rid of inflammation, and it gets rid of all kinds of things that cause terrible problems like autism, like cancer, like Alzheimer's, like all kinds of diseases and conditions throughout the body that are bad for us. Well, what interferes with the production of GCMAF? I'm glad you asked that one too, Vinny. I am so pleased by your questions.
Sometimes I've found that sometimes it's better to let the river flow than try to dam it and get energy for yourself.
Frequently, it's difficult to dam the river of my flow. Yes.
You don't say.
So, what prevents vitamin D, assuming that we have enough of it, from being turned into GCMAF? And the answer is an enzyme called nalgalase. Whenever you hear a scientific or biological name that ends in A-S-E, A's, you know that you've just heard the name of an enzyme. And enzymes are little robots. They're molecular robots that do the same job over and over. And like a robot on a car assembly line, which reaches out its arm, picks up an assembly and puts it somewhere else, then puts its arm back where it started to pick up another assembly and just repeats that over and over and over. So the enzyme that turns vitamin D3 into GCMAF does its one little job over and over and over and over again with molecule after molecule, unless somebody throws a spanner into the little mechanism of the molecular robot that is the enzyme, and it can't do that. What is the somebody in this this description? The somebody is this enzyme called nalgalase. Nalgalase is produced by the viruses that make us sick because they have an interest in turning off the immune system while they make their way into cells and capture the DNA and force the cell to create new virus particles. That's what they do. And nalgalase is also produced by cancer cells, which have an interest in not being destroyed by the immune system. So it's part of the defense system of cancer, and it's part of the attack system of viruses. They produce nalgylase. Now, if the production of GCMAF is being blocked by nalgylase, there are two things you can do. One is wait for the body to figure it out and build a defense against the nalgylase and start producing sufficient GCMAF. And the other is you can give the body its own molecule. That's the principle by which nutritional medicine works. If the body needs vitamin C, you give it some. If the body needs magnesium, you give it some. You don't wait for somebody to happen to munch on a food that happens to have enough magnesium. You supplement it. And in this case, Dr. Bradstreet and the others, Dr. Gonzalez, figured out that they could give the molecule that the body wasn't able to make at the moment and supplement with GCMAF, totally safe. The body makes it. It's just like CBD is made by the body. So giving CBD is perfectly safe. And cannabidiol is also a miracle substance that the body needs. And once you give it more than it has at the moment, wonderful things happen in terms of health.
But well, there's also some people who are trying to get cannabidiol supplements out there who are encountering a lot of resistance from the FDA and other authorities. So, yeah, it's the same deal everywhere you go, isn't it? But these people are being bumped off.
The reason that they're encountering the resistance is because, for instance, if you have nanosilver, 10 parts per million, and if you have cannabidiol, CBD, the part that makes you healthy, not the part that makes you high, then you have eliminated about 95% of the drugs that might otherwise be sold to you unless you're in the emergency room or in a surgical suite. You've now basically broken the back of the pharmaceutical industry. And the pharmaceutical industry, which is the government of most countries at this point, as well as an industry, doesn't want its back broken. They want to squash and suppress anything and everything that cuts into their bottom line. And oh my, does CBD cut into their bottom line? Does nanosilver, 10 parts per million, cut into their bottom line? Does GCMAF cut into their bottom line? Now, GCMAF, pure GCMAF, well tested and so on, was being made by a man named David Noakes in the UK, legally. And it was therefore quite stunning when the 350 doctors around the world who were using GCMAF learned that Mr. Noakes's factory was raided and shut down illegally by the European Drug Board, the equivalent of the FDA, for no particular reason, except that GCMAF was threatening to become a major treatment with irrefutable evidence behind it that would, as I said, break the back of the pharmaceutical hegemony and do a lot of damage to the genocidal agenda. It's hard to kill people when they're robust and healthy and they're not taking the drugs that are making you sick and you can't make money and kill them with chemotherapy and so on. So GCMAF is very depressing to the oppressors and very very heartening for us. Well, his factory was raided, and then the doctors started dying. One of the doctors who was buying GCMAF from Mr. Noakes, who will be a guest on my radio show, the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, on Monday, if you go to our Facebook page, Natural Solutions Foundation. And like that page, we'll send out information about the exact time and the exact link where you can hear this remarkable man talk about the product that he was making and that he is supposed to no longer make. Why? Because it works. Well, back to the doctors. So now we have doctors who are finding high levels of nivolase in their patients, and their patients don't have cancer, and their patients don't have viruses, viral infections. And these doctors are saying, where did the nivolase come from? And by the way, we've been able to measure nivolase as a marker for cancer for more than 20 years in a test called the AMAS test that I have been using for that entire time to monitor the progress of treatment in cancer patients.
See, this is my first time hearing about nivolase. I thought it was some kind of amalgamation of mayonnaise.
Well, actually it is. You take mayonnaise and you take mercury, you put it together and you put it in the blender and you add some dishwashing detergent and rat poison and there you go.
Oh, wow. That sounds really hygienic.
And then what you can do is you can put it in a syringe and inject it as a vaccine.
Well, why wouldn't you? You know, I mean, we only developed stomachs over thousands and thousands of years to filter out stuff that's poisoned to make us have a gag reflex and everything. Let's just bypass all of that, bro. Just put it in me veins.
And start with pregnant women so that kids never have a chance. How about that?
I cannot see a problem with it.
Right. Well, that's because you work for Big Pharma. Right. Okay. Folks, I know Vinny, and I know that he does not work for Big Pharma. So anybody who wants to take that out of context, please don't even bother.
Oh, come on. You know, if you don't have haters, it's because there's nothing about you that they hate. And quite frankly... You know,
I want to reassure you. You have haters. I know.
I've got a block list on my Facebook that takes about a minute to scroll all the way to the bottom as fast as you can.
Really?
Oh yeah. How wonderful. Some people tend their garden and pull weeds out every day. I tend my Facebook and block scum.
Well, there you go. I just ignore them. So I'm much too busy to spend time on scum. They, on the other hand, have all the time in the world to spend on thee and me. And it's really quite interesting. Who pays them to have all that time? Why? The industries that we talk about and the governments that we oppose the policies of pay them.
That's absolutely true. And the documents have actually been released on that. I watched a video just this morning called "Cognitive Infiltration: Legalized Deception of the Five Eyes Kind," and essentially it chronicles and shows you the documents where it is proven that the CIA hijacked the word conspiracy theorist in order to get onto people about the Warren Commission, and ever since then it has expanded, and nearly every country in the world has their own paid trolls and spies and things of this nature who are all over the internet misinforming, disinforming, trying to break people up and things of that nature. Why wouldn't they be doing it? Why haven't people been suspicious from the very start about the presence of these people?
Would you send me the link to that? I would like to view it and I'd like to put it up in our social media sphere.
Of course.
Would you do that?
It has already been done.
Thank you. I speak, you act. I love this. So the issue here is that if nivolase is high in children with autism, in people who develop cataclysmic late-stage cancer at the very first diagnostic inspection, and actually I've become quite concerned about the number of people who are suddenly told, well, gee, you know, you have widely disseminated stage 4 cancer, and you were in here for a checkup 6 months ago, and we didn't see anything. This is not an uncommon problem. As a matter of fact, it's becoming more and more common, as if the immune system had suddenly been turned off. And so Dr. Bradstreet and Dr. Gonzalez and a number of other people, many of whom are dead now, began asking the question, where are my patients acquiring these very, very high levels of nalgalase? And they realized the same thing by looking at their patients' history carefully. They realized that the likelihood was extremely high that the nalgalase was being introduced in vaccines. Now, I have said for a very long time that vaccines are designed not to prevent diseases, since they don't. They're unsafe and they're ineffective, but to spread disease and to create long-term downstream illness that the pharmaceutical industry can profit hugely from, including cancer, infertility, autism, and to shorten the lives of the people so impacted, to feed the genocidal agenda its sacrifices in the belly of Moloch. And some people have said, gee, that's interesting, and some people have said, gee, that's nuts. But the fact is that the nalgalase was seen by these doctors to be coming from the vaccines. What does that mean? If you remember, nalgalase is the roadblock in the emergency response of the immune system. If you block the conversion of vitamin D3 to GCMAF, you have, in essence, taken the key out of the vehicle that is the immune system and left it to sit idle in the parking lot while the thieves break into the house and destroy it and make off with all the goodies. Well, they got very upset about this, and they began publishing about it in various journals, and they began dying quickly, and the factory that was making high-quality, pure GCMAF was shut down, and you're not supposed to know that these diseases are induced and these diseases are curable. You're not supposed to say, I want access to GCMAF. And I want to protect myself from nalgalase. I want to stop putting poisons in my body. You're not supposed to have that thought. You're not supposed to know that the United States Supreme Court has declared vaccines to be, and I quote, unavoidably unsafe. You're not supposed to know that every vaccine deployed in the United States is required by law.
Well, we seem to have lost you just for a second there. Required by law to what?
To be shown to be safe and effective. Not just safe, not just effective, but both safe and effective. And if you would like to know the number of vaccines that have ever been shown to be either safe or effective or both, if you'll give me the space of time necessary to share two syllables with you, I can give you that number. The syllables are zero. Not one. Ever. Because no vaccine is safe and no vaccine is effective. But they're very good carrier systems for unmarked things that are not on the label. For example, nalgalase. For example, the SV40 virus, which the CDC, as I'm sure your listeners know, permitted to be in the poliovirus and in other viruses because they did not want to impose a financial burden on the manufacturers by causing them to do a single pass, simple filtration. The cost would have been less than 10 cents per dose. Less than 10 cents per dose. The cost of cancer to the child or adult who develops leukemia, breast cancer, prostate cancer, brain cancer, lung cancer, liver cancer, the cost of those cancers to them could be their life. It's certainly suffering and anguish and over $1 million per patient. How many people did the CDC permit to be exposed knowingly? To be exposed to CV40 virus-tainted polio vaccine? In the United States, the number is 98 million. Worldwide, the number adds another 210 million. And that's your government dollars at work. We're the government. We're here to help industry. We're here to screw you. And to the extent that we can, we're here to kill you because we have decided to depopulate the planet. And yes, the United States government has an official doctrine of depopulation. It was penned by Henry Kissinger, the Nobel Peace Laureate, who in 1974 wrote a document for Richard Nixon, 1972, I apologize, wrote a document for Richard Nixon, who was the president at that time, and the document was called National Security Memorandum 200. Read it for yourself. National Security Memorandum 200 outlines the U.S. depopulation policy, starting with, as it says, the third world. And we are now in the phase where it's not just the third world. It's quite a stark and startling document that was accepted into U.S. foreign policy doctrine as an official position and has never been repudiated. Now, Nalgales fits in with that, and suddenly the push for vaccines and more vaccines and more vaccines and more vaccines begins to make some additional sense. Yeah. Now, what do we do about this?
Well, I just wanted to relay this idea as well, is that basically you have to imagine the government's intentions are as bad as you could possibly imagine. And then concentrate on the possibility that it's actually worse than you could ever possibly imagine. And that's closer to the truth.
Yes. We have a friend and colleague who is a freedom attorney and has been for decades. His name is Jim Turner. He's a Washington attorney. Great guy. When I first met Jim,
Turner the attorney? I like the stories. I like where this is going.
Turning the attorney. Yes. Yes, exactly. Turning things around. When I first met him, he said, however bad you imagine things are, they're 10 times worse. About 5 years ago, he said, I've changed my mind. However bad you imagine things are, they're 100 times worse. And recently he said to me, I was wrong. However bad you imagine things are, they're 1,000 times worse. And I think Jim is an optimist. Now, the Natural Solutions Foundation, of which I am the medical director, and our principal website is www.drrimatruthreports. That's D-R-R-I-M-A, Truth Reports. The Natural Solutions Foundation has an obligation, we believe, to find solutions. After all, it's our middle name, right? And the Natural Solutions Foundation did quite a lot of research and thought very long and hard about this vaccine-induced genocide and decided that we did indeed have a solution, and it's available for you. The United States Supreme Court, and by the way, this applies by international law, which actually trumps, and I'm not endorsing a candidate, which trumps national law. So what I'm saying is as true for you if you're in New Zealand or Australia or Finland as the United States or Canada or the EU. It doesn't make a difference. It turns out that your right to informed consent is guaranteed by international law. And anybody who violates your right to informed consent is violating international law. And the name of the crime is very satisfying. It's a crime against humanity, you being the alleged human. So how do you assert? Well, the Supreme Court of the United States said, and this part applies only to the United States specifically, but we have reason to believe that the legal principle actually is much more widespread than that. The United States Supreme Court, in a case 2 years ago, said if you do not assert your right to informed consent, you are assumed to have waived it. And if you have waived it, you agree with whatever it is that they want to do to you, vaccinate you, or give you chemotherapy, or whatever it is. So, here's the solution. All over the world, an advance health directive has legal weight. If you decide that you do not want to be resuscitated, or if you decide that you do want to be resuscitated, if you decide that you do not want to be given heroic measures to save your life, or whatever it is you decide in advance, and you create a signed and dated document to that effect, that document has the force of law. Anybody who violates that is committing assault, battery, and in the case of informed consent, a crime against humanity. But how do you make sure that everybody knows what your advanced health directive is? Great question, Vinny. The way is that you carry on your person, in your wallet, in your purse, you put it in your child's backpack or diaper pack, a card that says, among other things, the following things: I do not consent. I refuse all vaccines. If you violate this advanced health directive, you may be committing a crime. You are being warned. And this is a legal document which has been magically shrunken to wallet size and has a space on it where you can sign and date it. Then you put this in your wallet or your backpack or your purse. If you're in a hospital situation or a police situation, your pocket, your wallet, your purse will routinely be searched for things like cards that say, I am a diabetic, or I am allergic to penicillin. That is a normal part of the established routine. Once this legal advance vaccine directive card is located, then they are on notice that you have put an advance vaccine directive in place, and it is durable, powerful, and follows the instructions of the United States Supreme Court on how to assert and maintain your informed consent. Now, how do you get this? Aha! Another one of those magnificent questions, Vinny. You must be reading my mind. You go to the following URL. You go to tinyurl.com/advance-vaccine-directive, or you can go to our principal website, which is www.drrimatruthreports.com. And right there, right at the top, there's information about how to learn more and how to get your own advanced vaccine directive. You should have one for every single member of your family. This is beyond important. This is life-saving. Let us assume that Nalgene is being introduced in the vaccines, and I have every reason to believe that it is, and we are currently conducting tests to find out whether that is true. But let's assume for the moment that it is. Nalgene is not on the label, of course, which means that the vaccine is misbranded, and that's a serious criminal charge in the United States if the government should choose to support the law in that way. But the point is, if it's being introduced into your body, you're at great risk by taking any vaccine. And how do you know if it is? You don't. You don't, because it's not on the label. What's on the label is bad enough. So it is imperative, in my view, that you protect yourself and you protect your loved ones from any further vaccinations. If you're worried about disease, contagion, then you need nanosilver 10 parts per million. And you can get that by going to donate.drrimatruth.com. And while you're there, if you'd like to donate, that would be just dandy. We certainly do need your support. But the silver is available there. It is totally non-toxic. It supports the immune function past the Nalgene point, and it does a remarkable job, the nature of which I'm not allowed to say because of the FDA gag law. One of the things that we are asking for support for is to create a war chest so that we can go full bore against the FDA in court, where the FDA loses more than half the cases that it's involved in. So we have a good shot of eliminating the unconstitutional gag rule that says that with reference to any natural product, we cannot use the words prevent, treat, mitigate, cure, or diagnose, even if, for instance, the nanosilver were to prevent, treat, mitigate, cure, or diagnose anything.
If you even made up your own, even if you made up your own word, you could call it, and they'd still make it illegal to say that.
Absolutely, absolutely. When the Ebola issue was running high, we sent several hundred bottles of nanosilver, 10 parts per million, to Sierra Leone, and the government actually gave them to the population or part of the population that had already been diagnosed with Ebola and had been taken into the Ebola centers to die. They reported that it cured 200 bottles, cured 500 people completely, and it cured everyone that was given the nanosilver. Obviously, if 500 people got what was in 216-ounce bottles, they weren't using a whole lot per person, and they were getting a total reversal of the diagnostic status. We reported that. We aired the video that the Minister of Information, Honorable Alpha Kanu, made about that situation. And the FDA sent us a warning letter saying that we also shared the science that the United States government had done, showing that when nanosilver, this particular nanosilver, is present, the virus cannot penetrate the cell and therefore cannot replicate and therefore cannot create disease.
The New York Times do an article about you and somebody froze your bank account?
They, Yes, they did. Yes, as part of Operation Choke Point. Our personal and our foundation bank accounts were closed. Our pensions were interdicted. And those pensions are what we actually live on. The mayhem that they created was tremendous. And the CBS News and ABC and the New York Times and a variety of other major publications mentioned me by name as a quack, a charlatan, a purveyor of fraudulent information and bogus cures. It was really quite dramatic. I felt very, very important because I had a new layer of rather powerful and well-known enemies. So I figured I must be doing my job exceedingly well. The credit card companies stole all of the money from all of the sales and donations that we received. Nonetheless, Vinny, we filled every single order, and there were a great many orders for Nano Silver and for CBD. We filled them all, even though all of the money was seized, and it's been quite an adventure. Nonetheless, the point is that if we weren't right, we wouldn't attract this kind of heavy-handed applause, so to speak, for our truth-telling. However, back to the issue of Nalgalaze in vaccines, we have good reason to believe that it's there. You never want Nalgalaze in your body. And if you get vaccines, we have good reason to believe that among the unlisted ingredients will be something that will make sure that your body is suffering from viral and from malignant and from inflammatory disease. And then, yay, you're going to wind up taking drugs. Yay, you're going to wind up needing inhalers for your asthma. You're going to wind up needing all the vast numbers of services that autistic people pay for and put money into the coffers. You're going to wind up with the single most financially productive disease that humankind has ever known, cancer. Now, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it? And do you really want to play games with somebody who's coming at you with a syringe? No, you do not. What you want to do is whip out your little card and say, this is an advanced vaccine waiver. It is signed. It is dated. It is a legal, durable document. And if you touch me with that vaccine, you will be committing a crime against humanity. That's what you want to say. And that's why you need this card urgently. So you need to go to www.drimatruthreports.com and learn about it, get one there, or you can just go straight to tinyurl.com/advance-vaccine-directive. This is life-saving, groundbreaking, Vinny. Nobody else has thought of this, and yet it's so simple and could literally save your life.
Yep, and that's probably why nobody knows about it, because ultimately things that are simple that can save your life, there's not a lot of money in.
There is not. That is true.
If it's complicated bullshit that threatens people's lives, oh, mate, I'm going to hose in, I'm going to buy shares, I'm going to expand it, you know, I'm going to inflate that, I'm going to incorporate it. But if there's no money in it, you kind of don't have those sort of people who like to build up empires and subjugate people getting into control of it. You kind of more people who just sort of behave as servants and kind of walk around and heal people and stuff. Like doctors, you know? Like doctors used to be, apparently, back in the day, before the days of the Rockefellers.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. You know, it's very interesting. If you try to be a good doctor, you will have the disciplinary board on top of you, like white on rice. If you try not to use drugs, then you are violating the practice guidelines that are written by the pharmaceutical companies to sell their newer, more expensive drugs. And you will once again have the medical arts board and the medical practice board or the license board all over you. And you know what I say? I say bring it on. Bring it on, because I have the data. I have the science. I have the signed permission of the patient saying this is how they wish to be treated. And I have the art and the skill to know what I'm doing. Oh, speaking of art and skill, I have a new radio show and a TV show all at the same time, live streaming, that I'm doing with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. You may know Dr. Sherry Tenpenny for her work on the dangers of vaccines. And we have become good buds. And so we have a program called Case Consult. Now, between the two of us, Dr. Sherry and I have more than 75 years of clinical experience practicing good medicine. And so if you will go to caseconsult.tv and read, that's www.caseconsult.tv. Read the website, take a look, and if you would like us to do a full 3-hour in-depth consultation, you can do it anonymously or you can do it with your real name. If you would like to have us spend that time with you and give you a no-holds-barred evaluation and a set of suggestions that we believe can take you from having whatever it is that you have to robust and radiant good health. If that's of interest to you, for yourself or somebody else, then go to caseconsult.tv. The show ordinarily airs on Thursday live on both TV and radio. And we'll do, it's moving to Friday. This week, it's going to be aired on Friday, and the station is www.consciousconsumernetwork.tv. So that's a wonderful opportunity to have a free 3-hour consultation with two of the most experienced, not yet suicided doctors in natural medicine, drug-free medicine, that are on the planet. You know, 75 years is a lot of clinical experience. We have a lot to suggest. And we'd love to have you there. Schedule changes and information and so on, please like and share our Facebook page, Natural Solutions.
Two holistic doctors that haven't been suicided, coming to you for a limited time, ladies and gentlemen. I had to slip that one in there just quietly. Thanks, Reema. Oh my God, that was great. We'll see you later, ladies and gentlemen. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. I'm looking for some equipment so that I can actually finish my television show as well. So if you can help out in that regard, much appreciated. See you again sometime.